These days, we live in the aftermath of storming the nation's capital, and we appear to have moved from the world of terrorists from abroad to terrorists at home. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Robbie Bach has written a new novel entitled The Wilkes Insurrection, a contemporary thriller, and it follows a series of attacks that at first appear to be from a Middle Eastern terrorist group. In the end, it raises questions about divisions and the chaos of contemporary society. Aside, that Bach spent some 22 years at Microsoft, so he's familiar with the potential of cyberspace, and we welcome to the program this morning.
Hey, good to be on. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, what inspired you to write this novel?
Well, when I left Microsoft, I decided to write a nonfiction sort of business strategy book, and I discovered, you know, when I published that in 2015, and when I finished it, I said, wow, I actually really like to write. But then I concluded I wanted to challenge myself, so I set out to write fiction. And I wrote about characters. I wrote almost 100 pages just about these sets of characters that I thought were cool in the contemporary America, and then found a plot in that. And from that came a thriller, The Wilkes Insurrection.
So what inspired you to take up this particular subject?
Well, my second career is what I call a role as a civic engineer. So my view in my time post-Microsoft is to figure out how I can help improve communities, how I can work with nonprofits, corporations even, governments, whatever it is that can help make our community stronger and better. And so when I started to write fiction, I wanted to write about what was going on in our country. And I want to be true to the thriller genre, so this is a thriller through and through, but I wanted to write it in contemporary America because I think we have some challenges that are worthy of discussion.
As a matter of fact, the thing that struck me is that your timeline runs along the timeline that we've had over the last couple of years. Why did you choose to make it current, that is, during the times that we lived, as opposed to, say, maybe a few years in the future?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that the big chunk of this book was written in 2016 and 2017.
Ah.
And so I actually was looking out into the future. And, you know, it's sort of ironic or funny or sad. I'm not sure which. I looked out and I said, okay, let me pick some things that feel a little out there, a little unlikely. So that will enhance the tension in the thriller. And then as I was editing and fine-tuning and adjusting and doing some other things with the book, suddenly these things actually started to happen. And so it made the book a little more closer to comfort than maybe I originally expected, honestly. That's made it more relevant and also, I suspect, a little bit more challenging.
Do you think it'll have a greater impact because it has that certain contemporary quality to it?
I do, and I think there's a visceralness to it that people will be able to relate to. And, I think the other thing that people relate to is the characters themselves. And so I think we've all been going through whatever side we are or wherever we sit in our society today, we've all been going through this at the same time. And these characters are going through it, and so I think people can put themselves in their shoes and say, yeah, I get it. I understand what they're dealing with and how they're trying to adapt and what they're trying to accomplish.
So I want to turn first to obviously there's the plane crash, and that's followed by another series of incidents. And I'm curious about how you developed this idea about how people were responding to this in authority. Obviously, they have no idea exactly who was responsible. It reminds me, matter of fact, some film some years ago about just the initial hours after 9/11, in which the Air Force people, the air traffic people were trying to figure out what was going on, and we didn't really know. Tell me a little bit about how you developed that sense about the fact that we were caught unawares and we couldn't track this thing, at least for a long time.
Well, I think there's two parts to it. One, I flew into New York and landed at the JFK 2.5 hours before the attacks on 9/11. So I experienced that in a more visceral way even than most people. Certainly, maybe not more than New Yorkers, obviously, but maybe more than others who were watching it on the news. I was literally looking out my hotel room at the towers. And so that element certainly influenced me. No question. In the aftermath, we literally, three of us, drove across the country in a Ford Taurus after 9/11, And listening to the radio and hearing how people were sort of dealing with us and trying to process things, and never seeing a policeman or a highway patrolman on the highway at the time because they were off protecting assets, that had a big influence. The other thing that had a big influence is, as I think about and do some of the policy work I do, I think about the infrastructure across our country. And I think about how critical it is to us and how much we've seen that in the pandemic, and yet how fragile it is. And it's the combination of that fragility with this sense of how do we know when someone something like this happens that blends together in the Wilkes insurrection. So that's sort of the genesis of where the ideas for my my anarchists come from.
Because one of the things that strikes me about the novel is that the attacks are sometimes they use explosives. Other times, of course, they use the cyberspace, as it were, extensively in some cases. Describe for me that combination that is out there. And I guess one of the questions, by the way, and I had this feeling about something else that happened a few years ago, is are we giving the terrorists any ideas?
Well, the good news is I don't think there's not new ideas in the book in terms of things to do.
Right.
Because in fact, I've done the research, and many of these things have actually happened, either in the past or actually since. So I don't think there's new ideas there. I think what is interesting about the story on that regard is this question about whether it's a foreign entity or a domestic entity. And I think our focus as a country has been more skewed towards foreign actors, and they certainly exist, and they're certainly challenging in cyberspace in particular. But I think the likelihood that we have issues inside our own country is real as well. And so I think the idea that whether it's something more conventional like an explosion, or whether it's something more newfangled and technically driven, is interesting, but the interesting part is that something that we have faced from externally, or is it something we face from inside the country? And the truth is, I think, of course, both.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think there is a greater threat, for instance, from inside as opposed to outside, only in the sense that, at least from terrorists anyway, after 9/11, there were attempts, by a number of attempts, which seemed to fail, outliers, people who were lone wolves, that kind of thing, as opposed to, say, for instance, people inside the country who certainly could take up such methods?
Yeah, it's really hard. I'm not a terrorist expert.
Sure.
But
sure.
My evaluation would be just the way things work. We are way more fine-tuned to external threats than we are to internal threats. I mean, if you look at what happened on 1/6, independent of how you feel about that politically, it was not something we were prepared to deal with. And that is an internally driven type threat. So, you start to deal with these realities of us having to think a little bit differently. And again, when I think about our infrastructure, how do we protect it? How do we expand it? How do we make it more resilient? And I think that's super important.
One other question is in terms of the politics of it all. Do you think that our internal politics, and indeed our structure in terms of liberty and freedom of press and all that sort of thing, that allows for, say, greater room, say, for instance, for people to take these kinds of actions that we were reluctant to, say, impinge on those freedoms, as opposed to, say, for instance, tracking somebody from abroad?
Yeah, I think, look, democracy's always been that way. Democracy is a powerful and wonderful and amazing thing. And the trade-off in democracy is people have individual freedoms. That's fact. And finding the balance between those individual freedoms and protecting the community is sort of the existential challenge of democracy. And it's easier to draw the line when you're talking about somebody who's not an American, who's attacking from overseas, or there's some kind of military threat. It's much harder to draw that line when you're dealing with the trade-offs between, personal freedoms, which we absolutely should and must value, and what's best for the community. So, you know, it is sort of the existential challenge of democracy. It's the thing we're called to live by each day, and it's hard.
Now, the thing that struck me by the incidents, it was the plane, the train, there was a dam, of course, blackout and so on. How well do you think we are able to, say, defend these kinds of infrastructure? Because there's a lot of them, and I mean, you don't pick just one. You, like, pick a whole array of different ones, right? I mean, it's like you concentrate on the plane, and, oh, well, there's a train, and then, oh, well, maybe there's the dam, and there's a whole series of these things that Wilkes said takes into consideration. I mean, is there just too many to protect, or what do you think?
No, I think the fundamental thing is we rebuild our infrastructure. Look, there's a proposal in Congress right now, which hopefully eventually will get passed, to start to rebuild our infrastructure. And if we do that properly, we build with resilience in mind. And that's resilience in all forms. So that's resilience in terms of just its capacity and ability to stay up and to continue to work. It's resilience in terms of protecting it from attack. It's resilience in terms of thinking about the environmental changes that are happening in our world and how we protect our infrastructure from that. So I use that word intentionally. I think a lot of what we have to do is think about resilience in our infrastructure. And you can't protect 100% of the things. That's just true. But you can improve the odds dramatically. You can prepare, and you can be thoughtful about how to make it more challenging for people or more challenging for natural disasters, as an example, to affect that infrastructure.
I want to turn to Ford Wilkes himself and this movement that he seems to grow out of. And he talks about the brotherhood being a sort of male-dominant, working-class-centered outgrowth of Occupy Wall Street movement. And in the book, I believe you write, you say, Wilkes knew there was an implied violence underlying the group's commitment to freedom and liberty. If the goal was to describe, or rather destroy, the establishment, by standards would be killed along the way, so be it. In his mind, nobody in America was an innocent anymore. Tell me a little bit about how you developed that character.
Well, you know, Ford Wilkes comes from a working class background. He started as a successful career. That successful career was destroyed. He turned against the established market because he felt like somehow he was picked on by them. And, you know, the challenge is how do we help those people sort of recover and stay in the mainstream. And once he was out of the mainstream, he went all the way. And what makes him unique, I think, in this world is he takes it the full 100 yards, so to speak. He's not just somebody who's a believer in individual liberty and wants to protest or whatever. He wants to take it to the next level. And that's the scary part. And every thriller has to have a scary part.
Right.
And so, you have to design a villain that not just somebody that people don't like, but somebody who is scary. And truthfully, for me, that was the hardest writing because I'm not a scary person. And I'm a pretty mild-mannered, irrational person. So writing somebody who was not mild-mannered and who was, you know, at the limit, very smart but irrational, is challenging. And I hope that character comes across strongly, not because I like him or his character as a person, but because it's essential to the thriller aspect of the story.
Do you see a connection between Wilkes and, say, for instance, some of the people who participated in the January 6th? And I'm not talking about the people who just happened to be there, but there obviously was some organization going on as well. Do you see a connection at all there?
Well, because I wrote all of this so much before that happened, it's any connection on my part in any event is unintentional.
Right.
I do think there has always been an undercurrent of fringe elements in our society that have been in this space. I don't think this is new news. It's always been there. And I think what we've seen happen in the last 10 or 15 years, for lots of different reasons, some of it social media, some of it other things, that element has suddenly gotten a voice. And We now see it in stronger ways than we would have seen it. It was sort of a hidden part of society before, and now it's a much more visible part of society. And so we're sort of having to face that more explicitly. But when I wrote this, there wasn't, you know, the idea that somebody would storm the Capitol was frankly, right, not in my mind. I would have thought that was too far out.
Well, at the time, did you get a sense, and I guess this is what sort of going into the Trump era, but did you get a sense that this resentment was out there, that it could foment beyond just simply the fringe element of, say, you know, a few pamphlets and a few meetings?
Look, this sense, you know, like I said, I think has been there for a long time. I think you saw it accelerate in the deep recession of 2007, and the resentment against financial institutions and the establishment that came from that, and that was a contributing factor in all of this, and it started to build, and then the recovery from that was very strong but very uneven, and that builds it even more. And so this groundswell thing that happens, and when we don't pay attention to those groundswells, suddenly they erupt. And, you know, we've certainly seen that in a couple of things that have happened recently. But it was that groundswell and that sense from 2007 that I was trying to build from, honestly. Trump hadn't been elected when I wrote most of this, so it didn't have anything to do with that. But it's that groundswell that came out of the last recession, which I think was deeply damaging to the, you know, cultural unity of the country.
You know, a lot of reaction, at least in terms of analysis of what's going on today, has been the fact that we do have changing demographics and even changing values for that matter, but particularly the demographics. Did that affect you in any way? Were you aware of that kind of shift that was taking place? Because I'm, for instance, as an example, I remember in 2004, gay marriage, for instance, was a wedge issue that could defeat Democrats. Then somewhat 5, 10, 15 years later, it's this acceptance of it, at least broadly speaking, in terms of the American public. Were you aware of that change that was going on beyond just simply those people who might have been disaffected?
Well, I think again, this is I'm a big lover of history. This is an American tradition. Right? These kinds of changes have been happening in cycles across the country for a long time, and the demographics of our country change continually. It's one of the unique things about America that I think is different than many other countries, is just the demographic evolution over, you know, now 250 years of history, depending on how you want to count. It's constantly been changing. Now, the source of those demographic changes has shifted, but there have been, you know, you only have to go back to 1960 to say, oh my gosh, we elected a Catholic president. And that was a shocker at the time. So I think, you know, in my sense of history, those demographic shifts are constantly an undercurrent. They play a role in the story, obviously, and they play a role in my thinking. But they, you know, I personally celebrate them. I think they're what has made our tradition strong and great, and yet they don't make it easy. And as we discussed earlier about democracy, it's not easy.
Now, you spend a lot of time, you know, involved in terms of cyberspace, that kind of thing. What sense do you get about the role of things like social media, which obviously really took off probably even after, I guess, when you wrote this book, certainly nothing compared to what we're looking at today. How much of a role do you think social media plays in that division and that milieu that we're now seeing?
Look, I think technology plays a role in all of this. And, you know, I come from the tech industry, and my view is that technology is neither good nor bad. It is, in fact, a thing. And we use it in a variety of different ways. Just look at the pandemic and the ways that technology has made the pandemic survivable, as well as ways in which it has made the pandemic challenging. And technology is on both sides of those coins. And so social media, you know, things like Zoom, you know, the ability to, you know, continue to meet and be remote, all these things are both the positive and challenging side of technology. And what I hope people will ultimately conclude is that they don't demonize the technology itself, but what they do is try to manage, and socialize appropriate behavior. And in some cases, that means regulate, I suppose. But you have to figure out how to use the technology in appropriate ways. And for some of us, that's an individual choice. And then there are places where it probably needs to be a policy choice.
Before we get to the Lincoln Coalition, one other question about that. We live in a society that is based upon, obviously, an 18th-century document with lots of concepts from it, although it's changed, obviously, over the last couple of hundred years.
Right.
Is that structure capable, do you think, of adjusting to this new technology, as it has, for instance, for the past technology, for that matter?
I think it is. And I think the thing that has made the Constitution so durable, certainly it was a powerful document when written, but what has made it so durable has actually been the leaders along the way. And I think the durability is less a question about the document and the things it says and more about the leaders writ broadly, a national, regional, local, that implement that and keep our democracy functioning well. In the end of the day, people call it a living document, and maybe they're referencing amendments and things like that. And that's certainly true, but I also think it's a living document in that it's brought to life by the people who are leading us. And so the challenge in the technical space relative to the Constitution and democracy, to me, isn't a document question. It isn't an Article 23.6 question. It's a leadership question. And, to use the phrase from the book, we're looking for a few Lincolns to sort of help us through that.
Well, speaking of leadership, you, of course, have Charles Agnes Ruskovich, who creates the Lincoln Coalition. We obviously know that there's a real organization called, I think it's the Lincoln Project, as it were. Tell me then a little bit about that piece of the puzzle, and because it seems to me that at the end of the novel for yourself, you're looking looking for leaders that will then bring us together and pull us away from this kind of division.
Yeah, and it is. The Lincoln Coalition and the Lincoln Project have nothing in common. That's what's so interesting.
That's true. It's true.
The Lincoln Project was very focused on what's going on inside the Republican Party, and the Lincoln Coalition, in fact, is the book is, in fact, party-less. It's not a political party. It's a movement to gather people from multiple sides to try to focus on policy that works for the country, not on policy that works for a party. And, that to me is the place we have to be. And it is a really difficult place. If you're a government leader, it's a hard place to be. Look at the people who are trying to balance that today, and they get demonized by both sides. It's really, really difficult. But that's what it's going to take, in my opinion. It's going to take people who are willing to stand up. Because the truth is, the vast majority of Americans, that's where they are. They may be a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, but the vast majority of Americans, it's a bell curve, and the vast majority of Americans are someplace in the middle. And we need leaders to take up that mantle and help lead in a way that helps those people.
Well, do you think that those extreme ends, and particularly certainly in the current affairs, particularly on the right, that those extremes will be able to guide the nation in whatever particular direction they want, irrespective of what the sort of vast majority of people really want?
Well, first I will say this. I think there are extremes on both sides,
right?
Just to be clear.
Sure.
And I think we've had a little bit more, we've been a little bit more in touch with the extreme on one side for a bit, but you see the challenges of the extremes on the other side as well. And I don't want anybody to think I'm a Republican or a Democrat. I'm an independent. And so I think there are extremes on both sides. And that's the risk in democracy. The risk in democracy is that whether it's from the left or from the right, that an extreme minority somehow manages to get control of the apparatus. And so the challenge for all of us is to make sure that the center stays strong.
I mean, do you think that there's a hollowing out, as it were, that these extremes will not respond to the center of the country? Sometimes it's because, obviously, there are, say, legal mechanisms and electoral mechanisms and political mechanisms to certainly keep majorities at bay, which and part was Madison's idea, but it seems to go beyond that. I mean, is it possible that we could wind up with a country that, with leadership that doesn't really represent it?
Look, I suppose anything is possible. I don't think that's what's going to happen. And I think, again, the long track of history in the United States tells you that we reach these crisis points and things happen to bring us back to the center. This wouldn't be the first time that we've had this sort of struggle with left and right. You know, you can go back even just to the 50s and McCarthyism. There's other examples throughout our history. So I think the center is actually strong. It's unfortunately not as vocal as it needs to be. And that's where the leadership parts of this is so important.
Should one take away from this novel a warning?
When people ask me the point of the book, I always start in the following place. You should take away that it's a great thriller. I want people to read this and say, wow, that was a great ride. That's the first thing. The second thing I want people to take away from the book is I want them to take away, gosh, I love some of those characters. You know, Major Tanika Smith, to me, is an iconic character. Mm. Charles Roskovich is iconic. There's some really, even Ford Wilkes, as you point out, is iconic in a certain way. And I want people to walk away from that. And then I do want people to walk away, as you suggest, with a little bit of, oh, wow, and I learned some things. And I, you know, in fiction, you have to tell a great story. And so the story must be powerful. It must be true to the genre. It must be true to the characters. But fiction also has a point, and it has a point of view, and certainly the Wilkes Insurrection has a point, and it has a point of view.
Well, one of the things also, finally, as we sort of wrap up here, is that those characters in government and so on, that they, on the one hand, they're certainly faced with something that that they can't understand. They're trying to track these things down. On the other hand, you do portray them, and I think it's reflected in some of the people that I've seen in real life who have dealt with these situations. As people who are dedicated and who are trying to do the right thing, but they're up against a very tough situation.
Yeah, as I don't even know who said it first, but democracy is not easy, and that's just a fact. There's other forms of government that are actually easier. They may not be better, but they're actually easier. So I think what we're really just experiencing is that challenge. And, you know, in many respects, the current environment is a call to action for people who can lead in that environment and are willing to take on that challenge.
Are you optimistic?
I am. I am a very optimistic person. And I think people, you know, you get to the end of the Wilkes Insurrection and, you know, it has some dark elements to it, obviously. But it's an optimistic book. I love the country. I am a patriot, as corny as that sounds. And I think we'll come out of this a stronger and better place. But it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be a challenge.
Because I think one of the last scenes or whatever in the book is that obviously one of the key characters dies, but it says to the other one, you know, now you have to carry on. And in some ways, I get a sense that obviously there's my generation, but it's the young people who are going to have to carry on beyond us and beyond this mania
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when you talk to a publisher, they say, well, who's your target audience? And, you know, obviously my first target audience is people who love thrillers, but my second target audience is young and middle-aged people because they are the future. And whatever our generation can do, we will do, and the next generation is going to have to do more. No question about that.
We've been speaking with Robbie Bach. He's written a new novel called The Wilkes Insurrection, a contemporary thriller. And it's about a series of terrorist attacks on the United States and how it's all resolved. And oddly enough, reminiscent of what we've certainly been going through in the last few years, although certainly much more violent here. But we do appreciate you taking the time to point us in this direction and maybe raise some questions about our future.
Thank you, and I really enjoyed the conversation. Appreciate you taking on the book and helping get the message out.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.